Happy January, everybody. Welcome to 2019. We are now recording. And we're an intimate group tonight. We have two fewer members of the RAC than we did last month. Deb and Bob have left us at the end of 2018, so we are down to currently nine. I imagine that we will soon have our two additional appointees. We're also starting at 6-ish tonight instead of the usual 6:30. The intention was that this was to adhere to Christian Dorsey's schedule, so I thought he might be here, but I imagine he will be joining us at some point. In the meantime, I will look to Valerie.
Thanks. One of the things that had been mentioned as a barrier for WMATA related to the Writer Advisory Committee Council was recruiting new volunteers. And I know that there's an application process and all this, and that staff historically has gone through that. But is that really something that the staff need to do? Is there a way that we might be able to assist them so that we can get writers on the advisory committee as soon as possible?
I'm mostly going to look to John for that one, because as to my knowledge and my experience, the appointment process has been largely out of the RAC's hands and in the hands of staff.
Okay, am I two things, and before I do that, did someone just join the call?
This is Yvette, John.
I'm sorry?
This is Yvette, John.
Oh, okay. Yvette. All right, well, welcome. The initial appointment process is largely in the hands of staff, just to winnow down the number of appointments to a manageable number that the board can review. Now that we have a board liaison, I'm not sure how involved he wants to be in the process. The other constraint mostly is the fact that the board only meets monthly. So we are planning on having them make appointments at the board meeting on the 24th, which is logistically the soonest that we can do it. My suggestion at this point, and this may be a feeling things through process, is that if you have people to, you know, if you want to help recruit people, suggest that they fill out the application and, flag me in some way, such that we can sort of facilitate that process. I'm not sure. You know, it may be something that the board would be interested in partnering with you, but I think we're going to have to set up that framework. So I can carry that forward.
So my intent was, I don't have any good buddies I'm trying to load onto the RAC. I simply thought of this group as a volunteer group that is committed to WMATA, and if there are ways that we can help support this group, as well as, not getting in the way of WMATA staff, that's great. I don't know, frankly, if there's even interest in the Writer Advisory Council to do this, but it's a responsibility as a volunteer I would be willing to follow up on if needed.
Okay.
So offer made, and then you guys can do whatever you want. Yell for help if you want it.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to follow that up to discuss it with me. Yvette, if you can hear us, could you put your phone on mute?
Okay. Thank you. And with that, I will, given that we have no members of the public present to give public comment, I will hand it over to James Hughes to talk to us about next summer. Yes, go ahead.
We do not. I'm sorry. 2019 came fast.
I know. That's why I called you today. I was like, oh my goodness. And weren't we also, was there a change?
That's me searching my memory. I'm another year older too, so. Yes. Yes, sooner rather than later.
And I'm sorry, Yvette, I was asking about the minutes. I didn't have my microphone on. I'll do better in the future. Sorry.
Good evening, everybody, and Happy New Year. Great way to start a year. My name is Jim Hughes. I'm Managing Director of Intermodal Planning here at Metro. That means I do bus and rail scheduling and coordination. And I'm here tonight to review with you the same thing we reviewed to the board last month in terms of this upcoming summer's platform project that's affecting our railroad. We made a presentation to the board last month. I took the same presentation, I put your title in the front, and I took a few pages out. It was much longer, but we can go back and forth with questions and if we need to. I think that Mr. Pesek actually sent out the entire presentation from last month. So today what I want to do is review our detail for this coming summer, where we're going to close 6 stations, which affects 8% of our weekday ridership. We've been developing a draft mitigation plan, cooperation with a lot of jurisdictions, and I want to highlight what we found from our customers and what we do to try to retain them. Next one, quick overview. From May 25th, Memorial Day weekend, through Labor Day weekend, 101 days, we're going to shut down the railroad, everything south of National Airport. National Airport will be open, but we'll close the 6 stations that are south of there. The biggest part of the project is we have to redo the platforms. And in order to do the platforms, we really have to shut it down. So we've got a contract out. We've let a contract to do as much as we can in this 3-month period so that we minimize the impact on the rest of the system. What we're trying to do is all the stations down there. The way the contract is led at the moment, though, that a couple of the stations, most notably Van Dorn, will not be done by the end of September. So during the month of September, when the rest of the system comes back, we're going to have to single track through Van Dorn. The contract we've let has incentives for the contractor to do that project during the other time. And there's a good chance he may be able to do that, but at the moment we can't commit to that. You know, we probably won't know until the summer and he gets in there and does a contract. We're doing another whole bunch of process contract and renovation of the system while the system down. So we're doing track work, we're doing some crossovers, we're doing some parking lot, doing some improvements within the stations. Once we shut it down, we're going to get all of our work crews in, a couple other contract in. But the biggest part is the platform one, and it's tied to his contract. What we started this at the end of basically the beginning of September was we got most of the stakeholders together, Northern Virginia, to tell them that something's coming. We've met on a monthly basis. The group is now up to 140 people. It's a great phone conversation, but we do pretty well. There's a bunch of small groups that meet. We've met on bus service. We've met on local coordination with the carriers. We've met with each of the individual participants, both the jurisdictions, the Pentagon, VDOT, everybody else, to make sure we can coordinate it as much as we can. I'll go through some of that. We've also tried to use what we learned through SafeTrack. And it's try to concentrate our maintenance efforts, our construction efforts, so that for the most part, north of National Airport, we're going to try to run regular service. We'll still do our weekend service. We might have a project that may come this coming summer up on the red line as the purple line happens, but our efforts will be concentrated on that time. As I mentioned, we met with all the bus carriers and we've developed an outline of what the initial bus substitute planning will be. Like all of the other Metro Access, we've found that if we put a good bus network in place, we carry about 60% of the people on a daily basis. They come to the train stations, they get on the shuttle bus, or they go through and get on the shuttle bus and come back. So that's sort of how we've geared it. They're free shuttles. There'll be 2 express shuttles. One from Franconia Springfield, and one from Huntington to the Pentagon, so they can get back on the regular service. And there's two local services that connect all of the stations. They're shown on the map. The two light blue ones are the local ones, and the two dark blue ones are on the express routes. We also have shown our five routes that we're going to enhance. We'll put extra service out there. They're in red, and they're shown on the slide, so that we know that people can get on a local bus and take it either to downtown or to the station. So we know they're going to show up. We'll supplement them. With the local operators, we talked to the Fairfax Connector, Dash. Dash is actually going to run one of the local services with their services, which is kind of new for us. They've shared service with us, so has the Connector in the past, but this is just going to be theirs. It's the local service in Alexandria. They happen to have extra buses, and they'll be able to get the manpower with the notice, so they're going to run one of the shuttles. It'll be with their buses, but it'll be just like ours. It's free. It takes you from all the stations and go through, so we're very helpful for that because we're always strapped for buses and manpower. Fairfax Connector is going to add service to their existing services. They're also trying to see if we can get a shuttle from them from at Huntington from the lower level to the upper level, because you really can't walk it and everything will be closed. We've talked to Virginia Railway Express, and we're trying to encourage them to add some capacity. They cannot add trains, but maybe we can add cars to get some additional capacity out of them. That's going to be a tough, but we keep pushing. Prince William County is adding services. They've got a new park and ride they're opening up. They also have some buses, so they're going to supplement their services that are out there. And so all of that is coming together, and we'll all be presented as one plan to our riding public as we come out there. As I mentioned, about 60% of the people gravitate to a shuttle and to existing services. So we're trying to promote alternatives for the other 40% of the service, alternatives that keep them being able to get back and forth to work, and also alternatives that will help encourage them to come back to us when this is over. So there's existing park and rides, as I mentioned, that aren't full down there. There is the existing services, teleworking services. We're a big fan of teleworking services. I'll get into later, because we've surveyed our riders, and people who telecommute during these things for 1 or 2 days of work, they come back to us. That's a good thing. Slugging community, if you're not familiar with Virginia, there's a bunch of slugs that come in down, slugs, people who slug up and down, back and forth, so that can be expanded easily by doing some promotion with them. We've been working with them and other places, some other ones that are listed here I'll get into. A couple of things we've learned. This past summer we had a shutdown on the Red Line. We talked to our riders. We did a survey of them after it was over, before and during and after. What we found was that we need to do a better job of explaining to them what's going on. They kind of knew what was happening. They showed up. They took a bus. Yeah, there's a shutdown. But why are we doing it? We didn't do a good enough job of communicating. 60% of the people did, but understood, but 40% didn't. And a lot of people don't know what their alternatives are. So we've got to get better information into their hands. That's what they told us. We think we did a good job, but obviously not good enough. Lesson learned. Next slide's on telecommuting. As I mentioned, 1 out of 3 affected customers this past summer did telecommute 1 or 2 days a week, and 1 out of 4 did it 2 days a week. That's a lot. Takes a lot. It's typically Monday, Friday, but it's good for us. Gets us more capacity on, and as I mentioned earlier, survey shows that they'll come back to us. What do we learn from our customers? We need to create, we need to have better signage out in the summer. A lot of the stuff we put up didn't survive 45 days last summer from weather, from heat, from people tearing them down. So we've got a better way of communicating, making it more permanent. We have to get upfront a more realistic impression of how long it's going to tell people. We've told them it's between 20 and 30 minutes, and it actually varies depending upon where you're going, where you're coming from. So we're trying to find a better way to do that. They've also asked us that they want better alternatives for outside of that area. and this may be easier to do on the Virginia side, because we believe a number of people will actually drive over the bridge and go to Branch Avenue and take the train, and that way it's a pretty good alternative depending where you're coming from. So there are alternatives to take other portions of the metro system. And our contractor service, we worked with him the first couple days. With any service is kind of tough. We had some issues this past time with loading times with the disability community. Every one of the vehicles has a lift on it. The problem is they're over the road coaches. It takes a long time to get somebody in a wheelchair up on it, and some of the wheelchairs that we're trying to get on the system can't be accommodated by those lifts. We did supplement it with some of our existing services, but we're going to try to find a better way to do it for this summer coming period. So some of those are the things that we learned. We're going to have them do more of the supervision out there. Generally, they did a really good job. First couple weeks are tough, and there are things that we've got to do better. We also, this past October, surveyed riders from that area. People who rode in September more than five times using the Smart Trip, we did a survey. We asked them to do a survey, and so we surveyed over 10% of the riders in that area. What did we find out? Found out that flipped the page. Well, we found that interesting. 70% of those people know we're going to have a shutdown next summer. That's kind of high for this far in advance. We were really surprised at that. Some of them, 60% of them, have kind of researched what their alternatives are. They know we're going to do shuttles. They don't know what they're going to be at the moment. And they kind of know what they want. They'll ride a bus. Now, we've done a lot of SafeTrack events. They know that we provide shuttles. They're looking for that. Some of them know what all their alternatives are going to be. But if you turn to the next slide, what they told us was kind of what we know. 60% of the people are going to just come and either take existing services or take the shuttle buses. So we still have to work on the other 30 to 40% of what those people are going to do. And those things are what we're working on with the jurisdictions at the moment. Not as many people take the regular route service as we think can and should take the regular route service. What the survey found told us that they don't know enough about it. They're rail riders. They're not bus riders. They don't know where to get on. They don't know where it takes you. So we tell people to take Route 78 or take Metroway, and they don't know what that means. So that's going to tie into how we communicate differently in the future. Lastly, what the customers told us is they're not making plans now for what they're doing next summer. They want to know what's happening, but they're really not going to make plans to 1 or 2 months in advance. That kind of makes sense. They might plan their vacation, summer vacation, during that time, but they don't know what they're going to do with their commute time. So what our next steps are. We briefed our board. They know this is coming. The contract has been signed with the contractor. We're doing a lot of work with him now. We're actually going to do some shutdowns come this spring so that we can make sure it's ready so that we can use National Airport and get service back. He's already. A whole bunch of stuff is going on. We really have to finalize all the alternatives with people. VDOT has stepped up a lot and said that now that we've finalized our plan, they're going to work with the jurisdictions to see if they can find some funding to help how they support the local jurisdictions and do some more carpooling and ride pooling and this type of thing. They haven't committed to that yet, but the commissioner has said that they're going to do that, and so we've got a couple months to catch up on that. And we are going to look at, we're doing some more research work. What can we do to get people to come back when it's done? We don't have an answer for that yet, but there might be some things when it's over we can do, say, well, now that you've struggled through this, maybe we'll do a fare incentive for a week or something with parking or something to get riders to come back, free bus transfers or something. There's a lot of alternatives out there. None of them have been committed to yet. And that we're going to begin notifying the customers again next spring. Here's what it's coming. Here's what your alternatives are. And we still have a ton of work on that. There's some things I skipped in the slide, but I think that's a good coverage of where we are now. We've got 5 months till the end of May to get it ready. So with that, I'll just open it up for questions.
Just to clarify, Colin, are you still name tagless?
Yes.
Okay. Just look perturbed or something when you want to say something, and we'll call on you. All right, Will and Valerie.
Okay, a few things here, actually, well, four things. National Airport, with the closures below that are, you know, slated for repair, is there any plan to actually shut down the National, and this is like long range, to shut down National Airport for any repairs, or is it pretty much in good shape?
We've met with National Airport a couple of times to see what state they're going to be in terms of their construction with the frontage next summer. They know we're coming. They know what we're doing. We've done some things in our plans. Not all of the shuttles go into National Airport, so we don't want to use a lot of their frontage so that the ones that we get in there can be reliable enough. They're going to dedicate some additional space for the shuttles that we do provide in there. Now we're talking with them about how we can communicate to their customers and ours what's the best way to use them. For instance, they should, from there, going north, they can ride the trains coming in. Going south, here's the alternative. Take this port, so they can help us get it out through their customers as well as ours. The other thing we've talked to them about, and it gets more into VDOT and gets into the local road network and what happens when it backs up, similar to what happened on Veterans Day weekend. If something happens, everything in that area shuts down. So we're still working on that part of it.
Number two, you mentioned Metro Access and having challenges with some of the lifts and the wheelchairs. Do you know, is it like primarily the weight of the wheelchairs or the width of the wheelchairs or the wheelchairs being able to connect into the connectors on the vans?
Over the summer, we had problems with both weight and height. Evidently, transit vehicles, we operate in all transit, is built to a different standard than an over-the-road coach. We're finding this, we don't run over-the-road coach, but it meets the FDA standard, but it doesn't necessarily meet for all wheelchairs. So what we did last summer was we had, I forget the number, three or four or five buses stationed there to handle what could not be handled. It also speeds things up because they can get on and off a transit vehicle with a ramp faster than they can get up a ramp. There are better ways to do this, so we're trying to figure that out. We've got a contract going out for a contractor to provide most of the service, and that's the way we're exploring with them about the best way to provide this.
Number three, now the promotion, and I didn't pay that much attention because, I mean, I pretty much know the system and how to get around, and whenever there's shutdowns, like, up, let me go this way. But one thing that I believe that people are probably not compensating for when they are making their alternative plans for circumventing the system is how much additional commute time. So, I mean, I don't know if in the marketing of the system shutdowns or single tracking, if that's actually being mentioned to remind people, you know, be aware that you need to add additional time into your transportation mode.
We need to do a better job. What we've done in the past is sort of a blanket for the red line. We told people you should add, I forget, we said 30 to 45 minutes to your trip. But that did vary, and it wasn't necessarily realistic depending upon which mode you took. So we've got to find a better way to do that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's always going to change, but you know, people don't even have it in their heads to think that, oh, this is going to be easy. I'm going to be able to just jump on and jump off, and I'm there at work or wherever, and it's not going to take that much time. But it does take time, and you know, because the buses don't leave right away. The shuttle buses don't leave right away because they wait for a little bit to try to load, you know, more people, and then they take off. But yeah, people are not mindful of thinking it's like.
What's really very interesting, because we've done shutdowns in Virginia a number of times, is people have different reactions to this. There's the people that go, man, they're going to do something. I'm like, I don't know what's going to do with the bus. It's going to take forever. I'm going to look for an alternative. There's other people going, I've done this so often from Franconia to Springfield. I hop on the bus and get the Pentagon. It's actually faster, and I pay less. They like it. So it's such a varied nature that it's kind of been hard to get that. We've got to find a better way.
All right. And the last one is on slide 13. I was looking at the different bus routes that are going to be affected or being helpful with this. The only one that I wasn't familiar with is Metroway. Is that an express service or?
Well, welcome to Virginia. It's actually a bus lane created for Metroway, so it's exclusive to buses. It's between the other lanes, and stops are created along it with special stops, and we have a number of buses that run through there, up and down there, and it's sort of like a right-of-way. It's not quite a busway, but it's as close as we have at the moment. It's pretty good. It's a work in progress. We want to extend it in different directions, but it works, and it's something that's been around for a number of years now, and it's very productive. So, welcome to Virginia.
Yeah. So, I mean, how many routes avenues that are being used right now for Metroway? I mean, is it like 5, 6?
There's 3 bus routes. There's 2 primary ones and another one. When we run this express route, there'll be another one on top of it. We'll supplement what's out there with more trips, and then we're going to try to extend another route onto it, which we should do anyway if we had the money, but it's easier when these things come on.
Yeah, it's rare when I have to catch the bus over in VA, but I mean, it's good to know that exists. So, all right, cool. Thanks.
Good.
Thank you. I am a survivor of the Red Line rehabilitation project, and I appreciate the opportunity to have learned some new routes and new buses in D.C. so that now I have alternatives and choices that I didn't make before.
Did you ride the G9?
I did ride the bus route, and then I changed to do some Green Line up to Georgia Avenue and took a bus from there.
Okay, good.
So I learned some things, and I would encourage you to help folks understand that this knowledge can be used by them later in life, you know. Learn something new. No, really, I'm serious, because there are benefits for learning new routes. And just a little observation. I'm intrigued by the Metro calendar, and I mean the Metro map, and I think that this is a mapping technique that this person developed. It's kind of famous. But I was shocked when you said, hey, for some folks, driving across the river and going to Branch Avenue is the closest thing. So what you might want to do is redo the map and just squish Branch Avenue and Franconia Springs. Somehow show that it's not that far. I think your map can help. It may give a misperception of how far those connections could be. So you might want to, a rehabilitation map special for you. but tell me a little bit, because I lived through the rehabilitation. I was glad the rehabilitation happened. But my Tacoma station was shiny before the rehabilitation, and it was shiny after the rehabilitation. I'm not even sure I know exactly what a rehabilitation is. So can you help me understand what the great things I was getting?
I'm not sure I can give you the details. There are things we're going to do in the station. If you've noticed in some of our stations, we've changed a lot of our lighting to make it more lighting. So we're going to do that in all of these stations. There's going to be new signage in these stations to tell you where you are, when the next train is coming, how long you've got to wait for that type of thing, where the buses are. There's going to be more displays that we have interactive. I think we're going to get the interactive up by the end of the summer. So they're all in the contract. I'm really not supposed to talk about them, but they're coming. But come a few months from now, we'll come back, maybe April, and tell you what's in them, show you some pictures of what's going to be in them. We're working them out with the contract. And if I promise you something and we can't deliver, it's not in the contract, someone will slap my hand. But we are really trying to make it a better experience when you come back. So the people that come back to these 6 stations will notice the difference. And then we'll use the things that we've learned here and try to get them into the other stations. But we're going to be doing a lot of rehabilitation over the next few years. So we're going to be learning from this. And one of the goals is to really make people want to come back, not just because of the service.
So how are you going to tell folks what you did so they know, oh, man, That is a new light in Tacoma. I got to look at that one.
I'm impressed with the lights. I'm sorry.
No, I'm impressed with the lights, too, because I know how much money you'll save with LEDs.
Yes.
So, yes.
It's just a minute. Anyway, one of the things we want to do differently next time is before the shutdown is to get in everybody's hand something specific for that station. So if I get on a Van Dorn, I don't want to know five different routes that do something different for me. I want to know what my alternatives are. So if I still want to go to Van Dorn, this is my alternative. If I want an alternative, I could drive over to Franconia Springfield because I live near there, and I could take the express, or I could do it from Huntington, or I could go across the street, or I could take the following local bus route. So when they leave, they know what is happening at their station beforehand. We've never done that before. I'm not quite sure how we're going to get it out into the right people's hands, but using the internet and handing a piece of paper, I think we'll do a much better job than we've done in the past. That's what a lot of them have told us that they want from their planning perspective. To get people back, we know who our riders are. Most of them all use a smart trip. Most of them are registered. We can use that information to get them in fresh. We've used it for the survey. We can use it during the shutdown that says, here's progress we're making. We can actually show you a picture of platform work going on at Van Dorn or wherever we're doing it during that time period. We can show, as we get closer, new lighting, new signage, come back to our stations. We can also use it afterwards to tell people that we are back and that we're running good service, and here's what we're doing. We won't say this publicly, but the first few days, no matter what we do, it's a problem. When we shut it down, when we turn it back on, take that Monday off. Don't record that. but anyway, we did really well with the red line. First week was a problem before that. We carried 400,000 people in the substitute bus services that we ran for the red line over a 42-day period. We're expecting a lot of people to be affected by this. And yet, we'll carry most of them on existing services, and hopefully we get them all back. Does that answer your question? Thank you.
Lorraine, question?
Okay. It's comment as from the experience in Pentagon City a couple months ago. Or was it a month ago? I don't remember exactly. But the situation in Pentagon City, being that there was a construction, made it so much worse with the shuttle buses and what have you. The big complaint was the lack of space to put all those shuttle buses. There is no, to accommodate the shuttle buses, okay? And a lot of people that were taking what they had been told originally was to take the blue line, because the whole shutdown was the bridge, right? So they would have to now take the blue line all the way around. I had a lot of people that were complaining about the additional time thing. It was like, oh, my 20-minute commute took me, over an hour, and things like that. But the thing was that a lot of people didn't know about the alternative of the shuttle buses, not in Pentagon City at least. And a lot of people were saying, well, what is all this shuttle buses? And then all of a sudden it was like asking. There was no, the signage was poor. And you were lucky if you found somebody that would say that they were knowledgeable or at least in charge or whatever. So my suggestion is in Pentagon, at the Pentagon, which is always a busy station to begin with, as far as buses, regular buses are concerned, you're going to have to double or do something with the controlling all those buses, because otherwise people are going to get very frustrated in there. Because I have been trying to get into Pentagon for over 20 minutes sometimes. I'm still in Pentagon territory, mind you. I'm not like in any highway or whatever. I'm in the Pentagon territory, and to get to the station on a regular, you know, on a normal situation. Now with all these other shuttle buses, we're gonna have to do something, and hopefully you're gonna have more than additional staff to direct and what have you, because we have to figure out how to deal with the additional traffic. Pentagon, it's really, you know, it can be under normal situations, it can be bad. I guess I am the only one that takes here the Pentagon station and is familiar with it. So that's why my biggest concern is that one. Because if people were frustrated with the other time, now if that everything is going to most of the stuff I see it, they're going to the Pentagon Transit Center, this is going to be really, we have to make something for the additional traffic.
A couple of things, since you used the Pentagon, I'm sure you know there's a lot of construction going on around the outside of the Pentagon, and we've had number of issues getting buses in and out of there and tied with their construction. We've met with them a couple of times about where are they going to be with their construction next summer so we can get the additional buses in here. And I think they're going to wrap up most of their construction so that a lot of the issues getting in and out hopefully will be resolved before then. We're still working with them. We've worked with our own staff and the carriers to find a different way to get buses in and out of all the various busways. We think we can improve that with the shuttles than we did the last time, but that is a very tough area. In terms of numbers of buses, we have expanded. We haven't let the contract yet, but there will be additional buses out there. A contract will be awarded sometime between now and April. So we'll have extra people out there, extra supervision out there. I think we'll do a better job. Our concern is always if something happens on the roadway, we're dead. If something happens on 14th Street Bridge, we can't get to the Pentagon anyway. Regardless of that, I think our normal service on a normal day will be much better than the past. We're trying to get over as many obstacles as we can. I mentioned going around the airport. We've talked to the Pentagon because they've got construction on King Street, all around terminals being rebuilt. We're trying to figure out how we can get buses in and around there. And there's construction going on 395 all at the same time, and that'll be out there next summer. So we met with VDOT. We've got some movement from them to move some of their schedules so that it happens later and not at the peak time we're running buses. So we're trying to do everything we can to make sure that the shuttles we put out there run pretty reliably and we'll be more realistic about what the times are. It's not as easy as we'd like it, but we're trying to cover every base that we can. There's no good time in this area to do a project.
We have a question from Rebecca on the phone.
Hi, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thanks for the presentation. I want to kind of echo a little bit of the things that have been said earlier, and then I do have a question. I'm curious if you guys have ever considered the opportunity of these types of shutdowns for more in-person communications from some of the folks that traditionally just like hand out flyers when they're advertising. I guess you guys call them like outreach, like they're giving flyers about these types of affecting like shutdowns or whatever. I'm just wondering if we couldn't use this as an opportunity to do some of like what Valerie was expressing, like about like looking at your options, like in the healthcare arena when someone's enrolling, they used to have navigators who would sit and talk to you about your options. If there's more direct feedback with people from WMATA and the riders a few weeks or a month in advance, then perhaps people can be reached in a way that is not electronic. Have you guys ever explored that, like someone in the metro station engaging with people and looking at a laptop and a map and helping them pick out their alternatives for the future? I feel like that could really help people prepare, like what was discussed earlier, for the hour-long difference or the 30-minute difference, or I find a way that could be even more beneficial to them than their original route. And I feel like that could really help win back trust from riders. Like, you know, they're the Metro navigating team or whatever. So that's one question I wanted to ask, but I guess that's one comment I wanted to make, but I guess it comes from the question as in the data that you presented about riders that you did in a survey, 70% of folks knew about the shutdown a year in advance, which sounds amazing, except my question is, where does that data come from? And are the people who are responding likely electronically to surveys from WMATA going to be a true base for what the customers look like? Meaning, like, 70% of people who are already communicating with WMATA know about the shutdown, but, like, what about those who don't respond to surveys? So if you can give a little information about how that data was collected, is it from Amplify?
Yes, it was. You want me to answer your question now, or do you have another
one?
Yeah,
I just...
Okay.
No, that's it. I just want to say that was my concern, was that if we're looking at data from Amplify, my concern is that data does not represent the true riding population. Someone who has already bought into a system of communications with WMATA electronically is a savvier electronic-friendly office, you know, like population, I mean. And my question is, like, my concern is, like, let's not put all our eggs in the basket of 70% of riders are prepared. 70% of tech-savvy riders have some knowledge, but those are already a step above even tech-savvy riders. They're tech-savvy riders who choose to communicate with WMATA. And so, like I was mentioning earlier, I feel like you should really explore some in-station direct communication with riders, the actual people who don't take time out of their day to think about surveys from WMATA. But maybe if there's great signage and people shaking their hands and saying hello to them and telling them about all the millions of different options and alternatives, then maybe people will be better prepared to handle it and also have a better attitude about what's happening to them because they won't feel so much like they got slighted. So that's my question, comment. Thank you.
I'm trying to do them in the order I think that you told them. The first one sort of was about doing more in-person communication and actually talking to people and giving them alternatives. We're struggling with that because we're not quite sure how to do it. Standing in a train station, tell people someone is coming and there's, you know, 1,000 people coming through in an hour. It's hard to spend your time with one person for 10 minutes or 12 minutes at a time. So in the past, our experience has been to hand them something to tell them it's coming, give them a way to find it on the internet or some way to find out more information. That's been fairly effective, but we've got to do a better job. So I don't know whether we're going to be able to set up booths where you can go and talk to people. We might be able to do that differently online than having them stand there. It's just when we utilize our resources out in the field, we're trying to get information to mass people. So there might be some way that we deal with that and say, okay, if you contact us, we can do a blog, we can do something back and forth where we can answer your specific questions to do it. We're hopeful that the information that we hand them this time is much more specific to their trip to the station that they're coming from. My example before Van Dorn, here's your examples for Van Dorn, and that might answer a number of those questions. You talked about the survey that we did, and we did do the survey of Northern Division riders. We took them off the Smart Trip card, and they had all been riders who had ridden our system 5 times in September. So they're familiar with our system. They're used to that. And so that's where that research came from. The fact that 70% of the people knew something coming was a surprise to us. We don't think that makes it any easier, but it does mean that they're still following us online, reading newspapers, reading clips, reading everything else, that it's coming. And 30% of the people who said they didn't know anything about it doesn't really include the people that are one-time riders for us. And so there's a large population that we've got to get to out there. And so that's why we've begun to reach out to the airport authorities, say, can we tack on to something for anybody who buys a ticket during that time period that tells you something's going to happen, this is what you do. Is there things that we can work with the city of Alexandria, who's been shown some interest to us, to say they've got a lot of activities that go on in the summer. This is what you would happen next summer. This is, don't forget metros, here's your alternatives, those types of things. So we've begun to work with our partners to get some of that out to them, and we think that that's going to go a long way to people that aren't our normal commuters. If we're still open for better suggestions, by the way. We're a long ways away, and we're a long way from perfect. You had a third comment, but I didn't write it down, so I didn't remember it.
I guess, thank you for that information. I guess I would just suggest that even the people who answer your survey do not represent the riders, because they are more engaged than the average rider. And so I would be concerned with providing, like when you think about partners, think about government buildings and places where people get government assistance, so that places that people go that maybe don't have access to technology like a computer on a regular basis, or maybe even the libraries, whatever, wherever they are, places that people go that have maybe less likelihood to be engaging in these online surveys, or maybe even folks who don't have their smart cards registered. Those regular riders tend to be maybe more like seniors or people who are not going to be savvy on these communications fronts. So I think it's worth exploring more in-person communications. And even if you can't do the in-person sort of navigating options at the riding platform, maybe you can do it at other areas that are in the affected areas, so that, again, more populations can have those plans in advance. I know librarians love to get involved in things. So those are just some suggestions. I appreciate it. Thanks for your answers.
Thank you. I'll take them back. I'm not the communication person, but we got a group working on it, and I'll bring all those suggestions back.
A couple of questions for me. Okay. How much coordination are you doing with Reagan Airport? How much coordination are you doing with Reagan Airport for travelers, people who are not regular users of the system and who would not necessarily know that this is happening until they land at the airport?
Well, the good thing about this one at the moment is most of our airport travelers can go out and get on a train and get to most of our system. They just can't get south.
Right.
So we have, as I said, we've worked with the airport's authority. We've asked them if we could work with the airlines themselves. What can we give them to get that information out? How can we jointly promote it, give them information, promote's not the right word, to get it into users' hands? We've also talked to the airport's authority about using some of their signage that says this is what's going on with Metro. If you're going north, they, you know, do this. If you're going south, do this. It'll take longer for your trip. The airport helps us because it's a sort of an origin coming into our system. If we can get people coming in, we think we can do a good job with people coming from the south that want to get into the city. One of the more difficult things for us is people who live in the city that want to go down there beyond the airport, because it's such a large area to cover people to tell them what to do. We're still looking for good ideas about how to get that message out to those people that don't do it every day but do it infrequently, and yet during that three-month period, they're going to have to do something different.
And one additional question from me. Did I hear you correctly earlier that you were going to be doing some spring shutdowns, preliminary or preparatory shutdowns, to get ready for this?
We may have one. If the Purple Line construction over at Silver Spring may require it to get the bridge over. We're trying to coordinate their schedules and our schedules, but tentatively scheduled. There might, sooner or later, we're going to have to do that construction. And when you do that, you impact the least number of people in the summer. But they haven't finalized their schedule, so we don't know what's happening yet. But yes, something's going to happen at Silver Spring.
Okay, but it wouldn't be an additional shutdown in this affected area of these six stations?
It, it would be a shutdown that could affect the red line during the same time period.
Okay.
Just not as long. It might be a week or a two-week shutdown. I don't know yet.
Okay.
Okay. You know, they've got to build the purple line. It's out there and the contractor's moving. We've got platform work that has to be done on the western end of the orange line, and we're trying to tie that into the contract for when they're widening 66. Again, so if you're going to interrupt Vienna and Dunloring, let's do it at the same time they're doing their construction. That's not this summer. That might be next summer, but that's what the coordination efforts we're trying to do.
Thank you. Pat?
Interesting. You got my interest when you mentioned Silver Spring, which is where I'm from. During the last shutdown, we had, after the shutdown, quite a parade of disabled people coming through, and they were concerned about the level of access. Particularly, we had a lot of issues with folks with wheelchairs. So a couple of things. One, maybe you could talk about what you've done, and I'm sorry, I was a little bit late coming here. I don't know if you covered it, but what contingencies are you making for the disabled population, particularly folks in wheelchairs and folks who are blind? And then secondly, I'd like to invite you maybe at some point this spring to come to the Accessibility Advisory Committee, one of our meetings, and you can speak to Christian Blake about that, because I certainly can take information back, but I think we've got a lot of people that would be interested in what's going to happen during this shutdown, those folks particularly in wheelchairs and those folks particularly that are blind. Before you answer my question, in those two areas specifically, two areas that you may want to advertise, one of course would be to talk to Mr. Blake with ADAP. I'm sure you know who he is.
Yep.
Okay. Secondly, making sure that you have an announcement on the Metro Access telephone system would be great. And then out in the Arlington, Alexandria area, particularly Arlington area, making sure that perhaps you could get an announcement out on the STAR system out there for those folks that are using paratransit. At least that would let them know, because a lot of them will use the fixed route service and supplement that with paratransit. But we don't want to see a lot of people moved on to paratransit. So if you could speak for a minute or two on people with disabilities, what kind of contingencies you're looking at, and then maybe get over to one of our meetings on a Monday, that would be great.
Thank you, Patrick. I did cover a little bit when we did the red line. We did have issues with the contractor and accessibility issue with wheelchairs. As you know, we used over-the-road coaches. They don't necessarily accommodate all sizes and weights of wheelchairs. They couldn't get on the lifts. They meet federal guidelines, evidently, but they're not the same guidelines as transit buses. So what we did during the red line was we supplemented their service with our transit buses so that they were stationed at the stations. If a person in a wheelchair came up and said, I'm going to get on the service, we would say, if you wait 2 minutes, we'll bring a transit bus in. You'll actually get faster to where you're going because you can use the ramp and we won't have to get you on that lift. We're looking at different ways to do that next time with the contractor. We have not let the contract yet. It's going out, and we're asking them for ways to say what's a better way to serve the disabled community. In addition to the vehicles themselves, we're trying to do a better job than we did in the May one. The red line shutdown this summer was making sure that all the locations for the express buses we use are inaccessible locations. Some of the buses we ran down here to Gowrie Place, we were under a construction zone. We moved it in the beginning to a better location so people can get in and out of the bus stop. We'll do a better job of making that happen. A lot of them go to other train stations, which are accessible, but a lot of the supplemental service doesn't do that, so we're going to try to make that more accessible. We'll certainly come back to talk to your accessible committee in the spring. I'd like to wait later till we get the contract in and know better what we're exploring, but clearly we'll come back and talk to the RAC and the ACC.
Great. That's perfect. That's exactly what I'd like you to do, because we've got a lot of smart people there that are
yes,
very
ma'am.
Enthusiastic and certainly give you an earful in their answers. But I think some good information.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Mr. No Name, Colin.
Yeah. So I just want to say, I mean, I think, you know, despite what everyone, I mean, obviously there have been challenges in the past and there will continue to be challenges. And as you said, you know, Metro can always do better, but I think you should be applauded for, you know, your efforts at continuous improvement and learning from the past. And, you know, as another survivor of the last red line shutdown, I think the biggest thing that I noticed and heard from my fellow passengers is what Lorraine said, which is sort of a lack of, like, in-station presence for, you know, people who are apparent helpers and, you know, and can provide information. It seemed like the first week or so that was the case, and then those folks became harder and harder to find over the course of the shutdown. And so I think, you know, folks who are looking for information on alternatives or, you know, might be assisted by in-station announcements or on-platform announcements, you know, we're sort of at a loss at times as a result of that. And then, of course, just simply, you know, calibrating people's expectations for how long alternatives would take is you know, the other big thing that I heard. So, you know, even if you're not able to provide, you know, individually tailored, you know, route planning and expectations, I think, you know, if you're able to kind of do some test runs of some of these routes and then, you know, maybe kind of say, you know, if you're going to, you know, Old Town Alexandria, or if you're going to, well, I don't know if Landmark Mall is even really a destination anymore, but, you know, it provides some kind of, you know, relatively well-known spots along those alternatives for people to kind of gauge, you know, about where they might be going and which routes, you know, get them there, and then provide some, you know, average travel times that might be a useful strategy.
Question for you, because you... when you started out, I thought you were going someplace different. So, serious questions.
Sorry.
The information before the red line shutdown, did you get good information beforehand?
I'm not a good gauge of that because I was well informed as a result of sort of being on this board, and I probably am a little more tuned into to what's happening with these types of shutdowns. But
okay.
I mean, I did see a lot of people handing out pamphlets,
okay,
like every single day, you know, weeks in advance. So
you mentioned, you know, several weeks into it, you couldn't find as many people, and that's true. We actually cut back on the people,
yeah,
because we don't have an unlimited fund to get people all over the place.
Sure.
But I took notes. We need to keep more people out there longer. That's why I asked.
Yeah,
no,
I
that's
noticed
good.
A lot of people who sort of appeared as though they were, you know, looking for bus or looking for someone to answer a question, you know, kind of in the, you know, the ongoing, you know,
okay,
controlled chaos, so to speak, and you know, not finding those people in the station. So
okay,
you know, whether it's, you know, providing, you know, some additional instruction to station managers to be a little more out and about and, you know, available, or you know, keeping some of those support staff, you know, on site and
okay,
making sure that they're kind of perambulating.
We'll note that.
To add to that, one of the things that I thought was good, but it did sort of peter off a little bit, was not so much even the navigation, but the crowds. As a blind person trying to navigate the crowds, even though I knew I was going in the right direction, was sometimes it was a lot of work. So having folks that would be available to help assist in getting from point A to point B is good. Also, one of the things that I did notice is when I was approached, a lot of times the individual would say, you know, I'm with Metro, so I know I wasn't just being, you know, taken somewhere, whatever. And that turned out to be good. So there was certainly a lot of training, but I echo what was just said, that, you know, you can keep that kind of presence. You've got a lot of people, I think, that can certainly use that kind of thing, and I was pretty familiar with where I was going, but that kind of assistance was huge.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
I would agree with what both of them have said, and I'd also point out that signs are generally a whole lot cheaper than people. So err on the side of too many signs at different heights. Some signs that are tall, that are higher than people are tall, would be helpful. A lot of signs are posted at points where the crowds cover them up. So making sure that you've got signs high, low, all over the place. And keep your station managers appraised of whether those signs are still in existence, whether they're still in good shape, whether they're still readable, et cetera, because they, over the course of the summer, they will not be. Okay. Do you have a time when you have to leave us?
No, I'm here.
Okay. Then I will say Lorraine, Will, and Valerie. And one from the ceiling.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just a suggestion, additional suggestion is since the shutdown is from Memorial Day to Labor Day, it's summer vacation, all these families that come and crowd Metro, we get a lot of people in Virginia that stay in the suburbs and come in through Metro. I would suggest that also communicate this information to the hotels, the tourism boards or whatever from each of the jurisdictions, because sometimes you, what you get is those hotels have shuttle buses that go to Metro station, and then they find out that the Metro station is shut down. So I think that that is something that you should approach other hotels.
Will?
Okay. This is quick. Rebecca had me thinking when she was talking about going back and forth across the bridge to the Branch Avenue station. So when I'm looking at the map and we're talking about distance, I think that one thing that might help people make a decision whether they drive or just stay in the system might be if you let them know how many miles it is to drive from one point to the other. Because the thing is that most people in this region know the delights of driving on the Beltway. So they can say how much time it may take them to drive that many miles to get to Branch Avenue and then decide whether or not that's going to be the option they want to excruciate themselves with.
Okay.
Valerie and then Rebecca.
Thank you. We do have a tool at WMATA that helps people do trip planning called the Trip Planner. And I'm curious, how does the Trip Planner deal with this? Because, you know, conceivably in a few months, somebody's going to look at the Trip Planner for something in this period. How does the Trip Planner help folks with this?
For this coming summer's event, we will do a better job for the Trip Planner. We're actually going to put all the times in it from station to station, and then the Trip Planner will calculate everybody's trip based on the frequency we say we're going to run. So if we say for the shuttle services, for instance, run every 5 to 7 minutes, they'll plug in 6 minutes for that. They'll do the wait time. So if you want to be here at a certain time, it'll tell you how to ride the shuttle. We have not always done that in the past. We put a generic time in from different ones. So this time we're going to try to do it point to point, and we'll see how that goes because we need them to use that.
Thank you.
Rebecca?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. I just wanted to say I also survived the Red Line debacle, and I'm also a member of the REC, and I was completely misinformed and not prepared because I just thought I was ready for it, and I wasn't. And I take the flyer, and I put it away, and I should be a better writer, but I wasn't. So I just want to put that out there, and I also want to say that when the information is given in advance, then sometimes it needs to just be given again, and perhaps in a different format. Like perhaps it's not a one bill, perhaps it's a small postcard, because if you keep giving out materials that look exactly alike, you might accidentally think it's the same thing, and maybe it's an updated version or something. And I'll say that with regards to the signs being covered, I think Catherine mentioned this, that's another example of sort of like information, like I'm just seeing it every day, so I don't think about it. I often see the red line signs that are telling us about one thing, single tracking. And so one day I was coming up and I saw the sign, and I did exactly what I thought the sign did say last week. I went to the other side because I thought I knew what the sign said, because the sign looks exactly like the sign that was up the week before. And so I guess what I'm saying is there are those times when certain things happen that are just like a few days at a time, and then there are these things that happen for longer periods of time. And maybe they can be bright orange or something, something that doesn't look exactly like the typical day-to-day signage. Because, again, like, if people see something every day, it might become to the point where it's not really a sign anymore. I don't know if that makes any sense or helps at all, but I just wanted to put it out there. Thanks.
Well, thank you for your suggestion. We do know that what we've done needs to be improved in terms of communication. So we're trying to collect everybody's ideas about what are the best ways to do this, how do we do that. We're going to try an awful lot of new different ways. Not all of them will work because they never do. We'll learn from this. We did do an after action for the red line. What did our customers do? So a lot of these things have been on our table. This clarifies some of them. Appreciate your comments. We'll come back in the spring, tell you what we're going to do. You can add your suggestions to that, point, and we'll go from there. Thank you, guys. I appreciate this.
We appreciate you coming to talk to us. I'm sure we're going to be hearing a lot more about this project in coming months.
It's going to be fun.
Okay. Then the next thing that we have to talk about today is our 2019 plans, work plan, if we call it that. We started talking about this a little bit at the last meeting in December, where it was mostly, it was a bit of a brainstorming session where we threw out a lot of ideas, but didn't decide on any of them, I suppose. And there's certainly some flux that's likely to happen in this work plan, depending on what the board has to say over the course of the year, and depending on how much we're able to accomplish based on our own size, our own level of engagement, and the help that we can get from various staff members. But we should have a goal anyway. Whether we achieve it or not is to be determined. I don't have it pulled up immediately in front of me, but given the topics that we had generally talked about last month, which I'm sure are fresh in everybody's mind.
And are behind you.
Well, they don't have to be fresh in our minds because John has pulled them up on the screen in tiny, tiny font.
Let me see what I can do.
So these are the notes that John took from last month's meeting.
Can you email those?
I've just been corrected. These are actually the notes that Colin sent out. He sent them out via email.
On the 12th of December.
Okay, that makes sense. I have that.
He sent them out on the 12th of December, if you're searching your emails. That was the list of items that we had come up with at various times in the past that we could potentially be thinking about for 2019. And they are now currently up on the screen in addition to... Yes, I'm trying to pull them up on my own. I'm trying to talk and fill the time while it takes me to actually hunt this thing down.
Got them pulled up on my phone if you want me to just read them right here.
You are remarkably proficient with your phone, I have to say, more so than I apparently am with an actual computer. So go for it, Colin.
All right. Okay, so the first one is a quote-unquote back-to-good plan for customer service. This came out of the notion that the original back-to-good plan featured very little in the way of customer service improvements. It was, all about, safety and repair and maintenance. On that same note, improving interactions between frontline employees and customers. This is something that we have discussed and sent communications to in a few different ways, one of which was specific to station manager training and better understanding, what the sort of standards and expectations are for interacting with customers, but I think, you know, the broader concept here would extend, you know, across frontline employees. Customer expectations for service, certainly we've seen some improvements on that front in the way of the sort of rush hour guarantee, but I think you know, what we have heard in the past is that there's still kind of a lack of standards in general for, you know, what it is, you know, aside from the rush hour rail service, what it is that customers should expect across the board in terms of service, and, you know, what the standards are for example, determining when a refund or other sort of, you know, recourse is provided to customers. A secret shopper or a rider program was something that has been discussed in the past. It's something that's been done in the past with funding. And so, you know, that's something that should be kept in mind is that there is likely a cost to doing that, unless it's, you know, kind of a ragtag operation. An online reporting system for in-service issues and repairs. Transparency in general for the agency, specifically with regard to evaluation data, but I think, you know, one complaint that we often make and we often hear from riders is that, you know, information about everything from, you know, ongoing maintenance projects to, you know, rider and reliability data seems to be very difficult to come by. So, overlapping with that is improved reporting on maintenance. This is a very specific one. changing escalators when service switches over. I'm not entirely sure where that came from, aside from perhaps some of our discussions around station manager responsibilities. Providing information on platforms at endpoint stations or stations where train info isn't available on the displays. So either during instances of single tracking or at stations where, such as Franconia Springfield, where you might have a yellow line train and a blue line train servicing that station. And because of some unknown system issue, you don't actually know which train is on the platform at that endpoint station. Procurement of the next version of rail cars and making sure that that procurement process takes into account the shortcomings of previous versions of the rail cars, you know, with specific attention to issues for the accessibility community, but also I think, you know, another concern is simply ensuring that it is a sound procurement that does not or, you know, makes best efforts to avoid some of the reliability shortcomings that we've seen in previous versions of the rail cars. And, you know, that speaks to procurement and contracting policies and procedures in general. That in and of itself is perhaps a little above our pay grade, but certainly an issue that ultimately impacts riders day to day. So that is the list that I compiled based off of previous things we have written down, as well as our discussion last month.
Do we have any input from the board of what they are interested in hearing about from the router?
Do you know the answer to that, John?
I was hoping the voice of Mr. Dorsey from the ceiling would come through to answer that question. However, given that it's not what I can, say is, well, in short, I don't have direct input from the board yet on what they want to hear. What I think would be helpful to focus on out of this list or else or otherwise would be items that the board is going to be making decisions on. So that would probably knock out some maybe more weedy things like escalator direction or, you know, some sort of technical things that, you know, maybe one-offs. And I think focus on sort of bigger picture, not only bigger picture items, but bigger picture items that require some kind of board intervention, because that's where you guys have your leverage or, you know, input.
Sorry.
Was that a comment from above?
Sorry, it's Rebecca. I'm not Christian. I just wanted to start. I'm sorry I interrupted. I just wanted to say that maybe if we just make a few more generalized sounding goals, then a lot of the specifics can come in-house when we work through, like, if we put all the goals that we want to work on for customer service under, you know, promoting a new back to good plan or whatever, so that the board doesn't necessarily need to know everything that we care about, as long as we can sort of fit our goals in within, like, more broader sort of conversational pieces. I don't know. Sorry to interrupt. That's all I have.
I think that makes sense. I guess what I was going to say, and this sort of, this is an expansion on the question, but I guess my suggestion would be, at this point, maybe try and come up with broad themes somewhere between, like, 3 to 5. You know, we can always add things on later. You know, one of the issues raised by the board was that, you know, the rat kind of jumps from place to place, and we don't need to unpack that suitcase again. But if you can present it as, you know, a number of big things that, you know, you can count off on your hand and maybe even have a finger or two left, I think that would probably, even if there's little subcategories beneath it, that may be helpful. The other related to that, or related, I guess, to, related to things that the board are going to decide on, or things that Metro is actively looking at making changes on, as part of the RAC's new bylaws, you're supposed to get quarterly updates on what we are going out to the public with as part of our public participation plan. So that will hopefully happen either at our next meeting, or that can be part of your plan and feed into that. And then I just also wrote down that at some point, you know, one of the big topics that the board is going to take up is the FY 2020 budget. So that may be something that you all might want to put on the list.
The other area I brought up, John, I think the budget has to be something that the RAC has input into. And then secondly, I think, I don't know if the RAC has been involved with the bus transformation group and the recommendations coming out of that group. I know AAC has, I think, 2 or 3 people that are participating on it, but I think it would be good to be able to get a briefing from them on, you know, where they are, what they're thinking, at least to the RAC.
I think that makes a lot of sense. The bus transformation project has the potential to be a very big deal and certainly would affect riders. To my knowledge, there's been no coordination with the RAC on that project. I'm aware of it because I work in the transportation world and know some of the people who are working on it, but I don't know anything about it as a RAC member. It sounds, correct me if I've gotten this entirely wrong based on the discussion of the last few minutes, but it sounds like a couple of our themes, to use up a couple of those fingers on our hand and hopefully have some left over, would include the fiscal 2020 budget, so talking about the finances there, and of course there can be a number of sub-bullets there. Talking about the bus transformation project, the potential changes to the bus system within the entire region, and customer service standards, which again would have a whole bunch of potential sub-bullets. And those customer service standards would certainly include how to deal with the customers when you have a major project like the shutdown of a system for the entire summer.
I like those three. I think they're broad, and it would give us plenty to work with.
I wonder if so the budget is vast, and I, for one, am, while I have taken public budgeting courses, am not a public budgeting expert. And I know that in the past we have sort of struggled to wrap our collective mind around the budget and provide timely and meaningful feedback. So I even wonder if we can sort of try to refine the budget item a little further with, you know, a theme or two around, you know, accountability for, you know.
How about from the writer's perspective?
Right. And I think
the budget would, from the writer's perspective.
That would encompass, you know, rail car procurement, potentially. It would encompass, you know, some of the...
Colin, can you repeat your comment? It's not really coming out. I'm sorry to bother you, but I can't hear anything you're saying, Colin.
Sorry.
Do you want to try a spare mic? It may be...
Is this better, Rebecca?
Yes, thank you.
All right. I was basically just saying that you know, the budget in and of itself might be almost too large an item to be sort of a goal or priority for our work plan, and that we might want to refine it a little further, you know, in terms of theme around, you know, accountability for you know, customer, you know, benefit, or, you know, for lack of a better term off the top of my head, and that could, you know, encompass things such as, you know, rail car procurement, but also, you know, perhaps some of the items we discussed last week around, you know, budgetary decisions as they relate to, you know, the impact that things like fare decisions have on riders, and sort of what the trade-offs are between, you know, various types of fare decisions that are on the table, or were on the table.
It does seem that the fare decision question is one that is perhaps most rider applicable. Certainly we're affected by how they spend their money in all possible directions, but
right.
The fares, and for both riding the metro plus the bus plus parking, all of that is most directly affecting riders. Yes, what you're getting for your fares. So that seems like a potential place where we could focus our efforts with regard to the budget. We don't necessarily need to tell them how much they're going to spend on IT or how much they're going to spend on, I don't even know what else, but we can provide some feedback, which may or may not go anywhere from the rider perspective, which is primarily what we're paying for the system.
Is to keep the board informed as to what we're hearing, what we're seeing. And I know that they will see certain things from their vantage point, but I think the RAC has a, you know, unique part, area that it covers for something like a shutdown that's going to be as long as that one's going to be. I mean, that's fairly dramatic, I think, over the summer. So I think being able to report at least on how it's going, I think it's useful for the RAC to do.
John, you had mentioned this, and I think I've already forgotten it. When are we likely to see appointments of new members?
Ideally the January 24th meeting, so this month.
Okay. So there are people lined up?
There will be.
There will be. Do you know if they are Virginians?
I know that at least one of them will be a Virginian.
Okay. Do you know if it is somebody who is in the zone that would be affected by this particular shutdown?
I do not believe so, but I can...
I'm just curious. As we're providing feedback, certainly it makes sense to be providing the live feedback or as close to that as we can. However, most of us won't ride that section of the system. We won't necessarily be seeing it.
Right, and I think that speaks to two things. One, I'll review with an eye towards that, but I think also maybe it speaks to figuring out a different way to get that information to you so that you can inform the board. You know, there's there were 21, there are now 11, and I don't think the board expects you to you know, cover all 368 square miles or whatever it is of our, it's more than that, of our, of the transit zone. So I think in terms of staying apprised of what's going on with this big blue-yellow line shutdown, maybe it speaks to coming up with a different way. You know, it could be a standing agenda item of a, you know, 5 to 10 minute. This is what's going on with the blue and yellow line this month. Here we go. Here's, you know.
A regular series of invited speakers, maybe too much of a term, but people.
Well, it would just be it would be a standing item. You know, I mean, if you all decide with the concurrence of the board that this is a, to quote Joe Biden, a big deal that, you know, that merits 10 minutes on each agenda for every month, then maybe, you know, maybe that's how we handle it, because this is kind of, you know, this is a big and impactful project. So that's something to think about.
I'm not sure that was a word-for-word quote of Joe Biden there.
I left one word out.
Okay. Well, then that is kind of four topics, then, to be thinking about over the course of the year. We've got the budget and its effect on the riders, the bus transformation project, real-time feedback as best we can from this summer shutdown, and then customer service standards, recommendations around the customer service standards.
Can I say something?
Go ahead.
Okay. I couldn't understand Colin even the second time, but I kind of heard like one thing that you were saying, and I think what you were trying to get at, but I'm kind of guessing here, I'm filling in, was like the budget is too big of an issue for us to put on our plan, and instead we do a couple of carve-outs, one of which is like some of the, like the plan or something, the transformation bus system thing. Did I get that?
In general, yes. The budget would be too big of a concept for us to take on, so focusing on a few of the carve-outs. The bus transformation wouldn't necessarily be part of the budget discussion. Certainly there would be connections, but
I think.
Yes.
Okay, I think, sorry to interrupt, I think that there are like maybe two or three things in the budget that we discussed with a presenter a few weeks ago that could be carved out, because we were discussing with that presenter certain incentives that they were trying to put into the budget that maybe some of us thought were a little bit nonsensical. And so perhaps we could make something on our work plan either budget or customer incentive focus. I mean, obviously customer service is one thing, but I don't know whether or not those specific proposals in the budget could be carved out that were, I think there was like a $20 million set aside for these three things. Does anyone remember what I'm talking about? Because I think some of those were areas that we could explore, and maybe that's, I don't know, like a definite or a finite way to just maybe make more impact on the budget but not try to take the whole thing on?
I would agree that I think focusing more on the fare policy side of the budget as opposed to the whole budget, which I'm saying in capital letters, which you may not be able to tell, seems more like something we could actually tackle, somewhere where we might be able to have an impact. And the fare policies that were presented, I think those, the $20 million package, if I'm remembering correctly, included the $2 flat fares on weekends and a handful of other items, which we had some questions about the value of making those changes. But that would be the sort of thing where we could provide our feedback.
Yeah. Okay, and then one other thing that may or may not be relevant to this discussion, but a while ago when we still had Sitsa and Joe, and they had done that outreach and then at the senior building, and they got some really good sort of connection with riders. We had discussed previously whether or not more direct rider engagement opportunities exist rather than just RAC meetings. And not like I'm trying to volunteer the entire 11, you know, RAC body or whatever. But I don't know if that's something that we want to put in this agenda whether or how we can explore more direct writer engagement in a way that meets more writers. Like, I'm trying to hold WMATA accountable to meeting writers where they are, and I think we also as a council could try to do the same. And I don't know if people agree with me on that, which was like the outreach idea that was discussed. And also, I don't know if people agree that it should be here on the plan, or maybe that's too specific. Okay, I'm done.
What do y'all think?
I think that this is Valerie, and Rebecca, I agree that more outreach activities seem like a great idea. I think maybe if we communicate to the WMATA board that the Writer Advisory Committee is interested in WMATA and its well-being, and that we want to reach out to writers, and we want to, you know, contribute positively to WMATA, and we have in the past reached out to writers, and we have in the past participated in safety exercises, we'd be willing to do that again. That way, you know, we're not making a general commitment, but we are saying that we have done that in the past, we're available to do that again. And I think we can still talk about that if there's something specific we want to plan to do. I think we could follow up on it, but I'm not sure if including a special bullet item of more writer outreach would be good, and unless we have a clear idea of what we expect as each other to do.
Yeah, makes sense.
Any other feedback from those around the table or anybody else on the phone? I'm assuming we still do not, there's no Christian on the phone, right? Not that we're aware of. Mm-mm. Okay. Well then, I think we've got a general work plan, not specifics with we will have this accomplished by this particular month, but I think that we, if we had tried to be that specific, especially with regard to the timing of these things, we would probably just find ourselves frustrated. But if we have these as a general theme, then hopefully that will encourage the board to plan to coordinate with us on these particular topics. It'll express the fact that we are interested in these and we'd like to have an impact. Whether we will, yet to be seen, but. Colin?
John looked like he was going to say something before about the bear stuff that we discussed last week. I was just curious what it was.
What I was going to say is, in response to Catherine's comment about capital T, capital WB, the whole budget, most of those things are pretty fixed, right? I mean, even if we make some changes, we're only really nibbling around $20 million out of a $2 billion operating budget. So I think you're focused enough that if you focus on that kind of stuff, you don't have to, you know, you don't have to know how much we spend on widgets or computers or whatever. You focus on the things that are directly right or applicable and that will change. And so just, I agree with your approach for what it's worth.
Yes, I'd imagine if the RAC suddenly started commenting on the construction plans for the new building at L'Enfant Plaza, for example, that would not be particularly well received, or it might just be ignored roundly.
But, never say never, in that at some point we need to figure out, I mean, you know, because our office raised this, Metro has unique needs in terms of space for public meetings and such. That we may not be there yet, and it may be, you know, it may not be this year's work plan, but I think at some point, you know, the Metro building, if we're going to use it as a place where we have public meetings, which we've been doing with, you know, with public hearings and such, since we're trying to de-emphasize public hearings and go more out into one-on-one rider engagement, that there may be opportunities to say, hey, as, you know, as a member of the public that comes into this place, here are some things that you can improve, you know, improve. May not rise to the level of a broader work plan theme, but you know, it ain't nothing.
Pat, did you have something to say?
Yeah, I was going to say two things.
I completely agree. I think you make some excellent points. And as a rule, anything that y'all tend to suggest that makes it better for those in wheelchairs also makes it better for everybody with a stroller. And there's so many people with luggage. There's a lot of people who benefit from the suggestions that y'all make with an eye toward wheelchair users that really just make it better overall. So, yes, coordination with the AAC is definitely something we will be highlighting. And, Pat, I'm very glad that we've got you as a liaison between the two groups. Is there anything else that we want to bring up today, either as part of this work plan or just for the good of the order?
Can I let you all know, since we're here together, we'll be publishing this next week. But we have set dates for hearings on the budget. There will be three. If you would like to either mark your calendars now or when I send you the announcement at the end of next week, but there will be one in Maryland, I believe. Oh, why did it slip my mind? Shoot. There'll be one in Maryland. There'll be one here. There'll be one near the King Street Metro. Monday, January 28th, Tuesday, January 29th. Wednesday, January 30th. So if you, I'll get you the information and, I'm sorry, Greenbelt Library is the location in Maryland. So I'll get you the information, but if you all, you know, would like to attend or, you know, to get people's perspective on the budget, be aware. At the Durant Center, it is on, we'll have the address on the public hearing notice once it gets published. It is on, is it Cameron Street? It's one block north of King Street. It's about one block from the north entrance of the King Street Metro. But I'll, once we get the docket finalized and to the Washington Post, we're still moving commas and semicolons at this point, so I don't want to send anything out. But DC will be here at the JGB. And I forget the exact order, but I'll get that information to you next week. So that can segue into your information gathering on the FY 2020 budget part of your plan.
And there will be board members at those meetings?
Yes, each hearing will be chaired by a board member. We are still chasing them down.
Okay.
But yes, each meeting will be chaired by a board member.
Anything else?
I move we close the meeting.
I hear no objections, so I'm going to go ahead and grant that. Happy 2019, everybody. Here's to a good one. Got 363 days left of it.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining. Have a good night.